Hello and welcome to Farming Advice Service podcast. I'm Laura Harpen and today we'll be talking to Mark Nowers, who is the Turtle Dove Conservation Advisor with the RSPB based in Essex. Mark joins us today to talk about the work the RSPB do with farmers across the country. We'll be talking about the particular challenges of this time of year and what farmers are doing to support farm wildlife through the Hungry Gap, and some successes and challenges of the Operation Turtle Dove project. Welcome, Mark. Thanks for joining me. Before we get into the detail, could I ask you to say a little bit about yourself and what you do with the RSPB and how you got involved, please?
Yes, certainly, yeah. Well, I'm a lifelong birder since the 80s and been working for the RSPB for about 23 years now. I spent 10 years as a warden, managing woodlands and grazing marsh and estuarine habitats, and then a few other roles in conservation planning. But for the last 2.5 years, I've been the advisor in Essex. I think the value of what farmers do is understated and needs as much support as possible. You look at the RSPB's land holding, less than 1% in the UK. The farmland landscape is 70%. We're not going to save turtle doves, yellowhammers, linnets, corn buntings on our reserves. So working with farmers, building trust and sustainable relationships is really important. It's a great role to have.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more in terms of the challenges of recognition and responsibility, but also the amazing opportunity that people who are making their living and running their businesses off the land, but also all of the wonderful things that they can do with that land alongside their businesses to support the wildlife that makes it home. Most people will have heard of the RSPB, I imagine. They've probably seen the brown signs to reserve if they're driving around the country, but they might not know that you do more than just looking after birds or running nature reserves. Can you tell me a little bit about the work that you do with farmers around the country?
Yes, certainly. Well, it's a case of where to start. And a lot of our reserves are farms anyway, in their own right. Speaking to the site managers who work with graziers on grazing marshes, etc. But you pick a rare species, think about soil buntings down in Devon or stone curlews in the Brecks, or even pretty much any coastal area where there are lapwings. And you know, we've invested a lot of time and resource working with farmers to generally good levels of success. If you look at the turnaround in fortunes for soil buntings down in the southwest, they're really down on their knees, but there's genuine signs of revival there by understanding the science, why these birds are declining, and then putting the science into practice, really. And that leap from science to practice needs the engagement and support and willingness of farmers to deliver that in those instances. And that just replicates across those species that I mentioned.
Fabulous. How do you approach building those relationships and having those conversations with farmers? Is it a case of, you've already mentioned there are particular areas where there are particular species that you're looking to focus on, and then people like yourselves from the RSPB would reach out to farming businesses in the area? Is it that farmers are coming to you to ask for support? Can you give us some examples of what that looks like day to day?
I think day to day it comes down to a phone call and a black book quite often. It's more that I'd say, it's from my personal experience, it's more about reaching out to an existing network. Mm-hmm. And then demonstrating with one, you know, a few farmers that there's something there for farmers to feel part of, and it works with their farming operation, which is the most critical thing. Whatever we're doing has to fit with what farmers are doing on the ground, and I'm always cognizant of that. And then a good word spreads, you know, but these things take time. It's about building trust and showing support and understanding, and then over time, things snowball, essentially.
And I know that we're going to talk about some good examples of that in relation to the Turtle Dove project that you work in particularly. Why do or should people work with the RSPB as compared to the various other different organisations, support and paid for out there, who might be talking about the same thing? In your experience, what are people motivated by when they think, right, I want to do this on my farm, I'm going to talk to the RSPB?
Well, I think personally, there is obviously an offer that I provide around turtle doves, and a focus is on turtle doves in this area, and people just gravitate towards myself. But I find that I do provide a visit, which is free, which is an incentive in its own right. Mm-hmm. Of course, most farmers will be seeking advice from lots of different quarters, you know, be it Oak Bank, be it other wildlife trusts, be it Farming and Wildlife Advisory Group. But you know, we, as RSPB advisors, we have a particular expertise, and farmers who want to see more nature on their farm, particularly in a targeted way, will come to us, and then we build that trust and have that lasting relationship.
Brilliant. And you mentioned that there are farming activity going on reserves. I think that it's Hope Farm, which is a dedicated farming business that the RSPB run as a commercial enterprise, that also is a bit of an exemplar for the kind of thing that you can do within a commercial farming business that also does all of the good stuff for habitat and wildlife.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, my first role was as a stockman on the Ewes Washes back in about 2001. But 12 miles long, half a mile wide, 2,000 head of cattle coming on every year, a multitude of different landowners from all over the country. It's a farm business, and all of the coastal reserves that we manage, certainly in Essex, that I'm, you know, that I'm more familiar with, they all have livestock grazing and grazers coming on that do their own lookering. And so we're totally sort of aware of the pressures that farmers face in that regard. But yeah, as you mentioned, Hope Farm is the RSPB demonstration farm in Cambridgeshire, which was set up in about 2000. And the purpose of setting it up was to have a working farm, a standard working farm, medium size, heavy clay, fairly typical for lowland England, growing a cereal rotation, but at the same time implementing the various countryside stewardship measures to demonstrate, and then monitoring the impact of those changes over time. So yeah, and that's still going strong. Georgie Bray's the farm manager, you know, she does a brilliant job. That book is full in the spring and the summer from various farming groups coming in to see what is happening. There's a lot of webinars promoting the work of Hope Farm, you know, and there's a sort of always trying different techniques on site. You know, they've recently started doing some agroforestry as well. So, yeah, embracing as much as they can, but running a working farm and looking to turn a profit.
Sure. And yeah, I certainly know the work that we do with Farm Advice Service. If we are going to be talking about any kind of farm management that is likely to have an impact on the farm business, we want to talk to farmers who've actually done it in order to get a realistic idea of how practical it is for people who are looking at adopting it. Hopefully, the benefits. So I'm thinking particularly things like nutrient management planning and integrated pest management as a way to both boost profitability, either by reducing your costs or improving yield, but also the knock-ons of the benefit to farm wildlife and all sorts of things, water quality, air quality, and it can hit a huge range. And ideally, if we can't physically get people out onto farm to see it firsthand, we can at least talk to people who have done it and have felt the benefits and can speak from their own experience. Can you give us a bit of an insight or a quick summary of what the particular challenges are around the hungry gap? Those who don't know, hungry gap, we may well have heard, is this period that we are now entering where it's cold. Most of the, well, correct me if I'm wrong, actually, Mark, my understanding is that we're coming into it and it's that there isn't much insect food stuff around for birds in particular, and that it's just quite a challenging time where sometimes if the habitat doesn't support the wildlife as we would like, there are things that farmers can do to support the wildlife on their farms through the hungry gap into the spring.
The hungry gap is that sort of end of winter into spring sort of window. Certainly with wild bird covers, the AB9s or whatever the new SFI option is for wild bird covers, you know, that they're coming into their own now, have been probably since September through to sort of January, February time, particularly the end, you're seeing that a good wild bird cover, which is seed rich, is providing a huge amount of value for regular farming birds like linnets and reed buntings and yellowhammers and corn buntings and chaffinches, etc. It's when they start to go over in February, March time, that the supplementary feeding that a lot of farmers do, particularly through mid-tier options, existing mid-tier options, shows its value. I remember going out on farms, a couple of farms last year, where they're doing some really good targeted supplementary feeding, and the number of yellowhammers that just sort of just appeared from nowhere, sort of from late January through February, March, was remarkable. So one farm in mid-Suffolk had 300 yellowhammers on its farm because of because of the quality. It's a good farm anyway in its own right, good habitats, but the supplementary feeding really was the icing on the cake in, mm-hmm. for that hungry cat.
Brilliant. Okay. And you've already mentioned some of the options. I appreciate that we'll be talking about them in the podcast, but people might want to click through to other links. So I should just say that anything that we mention here that I think will be useful to people who are listening, I'll also put links through to where you can find more information in the podcast description. So don't worry if you're listening to this while you're out and about, you can have a look and we'll flag things up. Because as you said, there are some funded options that specifically target both the hungry gap, but also more broadly supporting wildlife on farm alongside the profitable farm business. And the new SFI offer for 2024 went live beyond expression of interest. It is, as we record this, open to anybody who wishes to apply. Off the top of my head, I think there are 102 options. And I know that the tool that they've put on gov.uk allows you to filter those options by what your particular focus is in terms of priorities, as well as your farming business. And they have an option that is pollinators and wildlife. I had a quick look at this before we spoke, Mark, because I thought that it might come up in our conversation. And yeah, there's a number there around both supplementary feeding, so literally putting food out on the ground, but also the things that you mentioned of creating habitat or foodstuffs alongside, which essentially take care of themselves once you've got them incorporated, treat them like a crop in terms of taking care of them, make sure they grow, but then they provide something that hopefully is beneficial to the wildlife, but also I think from your description provides something really lovely to see over the grey winter months when potentially there's not much green growing from a crop perspective and maybe livestock aren't out and about on the ground either.
Yeah, right. I mean, there was a lot to be said for seeing a large flock of farmland birds on a crisp, clear blue sky day. You know, it warms the heart. It warms my heart. I would imagine a farmer who's done that must feel, you know, really encouraged to see those rewards and those intangible benefits. You know, of you've planned that AB9, you've put it there, it's established well, and it's providing a lot of seed, and there's the answer flying in the sky above you.
Okay, so if someone is either coming to the end of a current agreement, perhaps, or looking to enter into SFI, or just having a bit of a think about what the best ways might be to approach incorporating more for wildlife into their farm, I think there's a particular approach that you use and the RSPB more generally suggests as a way to get started on that. Can you talk us through it?
Yeah, certainly, yeah. So there's a really good website called farmwildlife.info, and on there it sets out six key actions, it's a really good framework to look at how to get the best out of the farm, but obviously at the same time works in harmony with the farming operation. So look at the existing habitats on your farm. These are often the best bits for wildlife, your woodlands, your permanent grasslands, your ponds, making sure those existing habitats are well managed. Then you take in your field boundaries, your hedgerows or your hedge banks or other boundary features, depending on where you are in the countryside, and getting the most out of your field boundaries and making sure they're well buffered. Simply just having a well-managed hedge and a buffer next to it, a permanent grass buffer, just a simple thing, could protect that feature, adds value next to it, for example. Then looking at your water quality and your water availability, doing what you can to make sure that your water is clear and unpolluted. So again, well buffered, you know, protecting that water in the farm landscape. Then it's looking at flower-rich habitats for pollinators, seed-rich habitats for farmland birds, which we've already touched on. And then these are all boundary features primarily. And then within the farmed area, there could be options. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's about, this is a framework. What would work when you have that conversation around the table? You know, it could be skylark plots, could be lapwing plots, could be low-input headlands, could be enhanced overwinter stubbles, you know, et cetera. And if you frame your planning for nature on your farm around those six principles, that's a really good starting point. And then you can look at the 102 SFI options or whatever other schemes are available and frame things in that context.
Yeah, brilliant. And that actually ties in really nicely with conversations, actually, webinars that FAS has run, where we've been talking about using the options to promote what you're already doing and just make it better all over. So it's not about doing a huge sea change and abandoning certain practices or completely shifting the way that you're doing business. It's just about looking at what you're already doing and actually what are the small adjustments that could be made, which hopefully will either be neutral or ideally beneficial for the farm business, but also really good for the wildlife as well.
Yeah, it's fine-tuning, essentially. It is, mm-hmm. and it boils down, as I said before, it's just my approaches and our advisor's approaches is to understand what the farm does, what they want to do, and how we can help, and complementing what happens.
Yep, and you don't have to do it on your own. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit today in terms of the RSPB support, the various different organisations that Farming Advice Service works with, funding from government in the form of SFI, Coastal Stewardship, or lots of different places where you can get both advice to know how to get started and support with the kind of administrative element, but also, funding and support, which means that it's not a case of either or. You can do both.
Yeah, yes, it's never binary. Yeah, nature-friendly farming is not one or the other. They go together.
Right. Now, I would like to ask you to tell us a bit about your specialty subject. There might be some people who are listening who have been fortunate enough to see a turtle dove. I think I've probably seen two in my lifetime. I was living over
where was
East Anglia. That was at, I think it's Frampton Marsh. There was on the way from somewhere to somewhere. It's just stopped off in one of the big wild hedgerows that they had on between, funnily enough, between farmland and the nature reserve. And everybody got very excited because it is a real privilege. Some people might only know them from the 12 Days of Christmas, if we're honest. So before we start talking about the importance of farm action and habitat to turtle doves, for the uninitiated, can you just tell us a little bit about them, please?
I can, yeah. You better tell me when to stop. migratory dove, smallest UK dove, and it's the only one that migrates. They spend the winter in Africa. Our birds migrate through the western flyway of Europe, through France, Spain and Portugal, spend the winter in Mali, Senegal, arrive here April, May time. Lovely purring song that the males deliver. They nest in thick, thorny scrub. They need access to fresh water for drinking, but the most important thing is availability of food. And so they're a seed eater, an obligate granivore, as they say. And they feed on the ground, and they need an abundance of accessible seed-rich habitat. The best food is the seeds of arable plants, also known as weeds. You know, so things like chickweed, scarlet pimpernel, fumitory, cranesbills, medics, trefoils, yarrow. They're not fussy about their diet. Problem has been that there's not enough available and abundant seed-rich habitat, particularly earlier on in the season, April, May time when they first arrive. So our role is to work with farmers to provide bespoke advice to make their farms more turtle dove friendly. But going back to the flyway situation, so back in the 60s, there were 135,000 pairs in the country. In the 2021 survey, we're down to 2,100 pairs. They are not being as productive as a species now as they were in the 60s. In the 60s, they had three, occasionally four broods a year. Now they have one and a half, two. So that drop in productivity has driven their population decline. But also they're being hunted in obscene numbers in the flyway. In 2019, the bag return was 900,000 birds. That's nearly a million birds shot in 2019 in those three countries. But through the work of the Species Action Plan, been an international effort, there's been a zero harvest of turtle doves for the last four autumns in those countries. And on the back of that, in the first 2 years, the population's gone up 25%.
Okay, great.
In those countries. That's massive. Mm-hmm. And that's, you wouldn't, you know, to go back 15 years to say, right, we've got a problem with hunting here. What are we going to do about it? I know we'll stop three countries shooting them. You think that, God, good luck with that. You know, it has happened and it's in place. You know, it's a temporary thing. It's a moratorium. Hunting will return at some stage, but it'll be a much more managed thing. And the hunters, the hunting communities are part of the discussion and part of the process to make sure that any future return of shooting is much more limited and much more controlled. But here in the UK, last year we had over 400 farms that we're working with in East England and South East England, looking to create foraging habitat, protecting nesting habitat, restoring ponds. And one of the most important things we do at the moment is we run a supplementary feeding program. Because there's a lack of food availability in the early spring, we provide farmers in targeted areas with seed to broadcast once a week a certain amount over a certain area for turtle doves to utilise. It's best put near nesting habitat. So the young birds, when they first fledge, only move a few hundred metres in the first couple of weeks of their life. So the purpose of a farm visit is we can identify the potential nesting habitat, or if we know there are birds nesting anywhere, so find a feeding area within 300 metres of that, ideally next to it, so that when the youngsters flop out of the nest, they've got a decent feed in front of them. You know? And we know that birds, you know, adults are in better condition and youngsters are in better condition if they've got access to a good seed-rich diet. And ideally, a diet that is from natural arable plants, which then leads us on to finding options that will work with the farmer that will provide that natural food source, be it cultivated margins, overwinter stubbles, low input harvested headlands, etc. It's finding out what works for the farm.
Fantastic. Okay, so it feels like there are actually a few different things that people can do. If you're lucky enough to be in a part of the country where you know that there are turtle doves breeding, then brilliant. And there are very specific actions that you can take to make sure that those breeding pairs fledge as many surviving youngsters that can then go on and swell the population. But there's also obviously a couple of bigger challenges, one around hunting, which is being managed as a kind of an international concern, but another around the availability of the right kind of habitat and food across the wide area, so that when hopefully those fledglings, the numbers creep up or boom up perhaps, and they are coming back and looking for breeding grounds where they can raise multiple broods, that there are lots of options for them. Is that about the weight of it?
That's about it, yeah, certainly. That 25% increase in the flyway population is from the cause in those countries, but our birds in the UK are part of the Western flyway population. There's interchange there. You know, these are long-distance migrants. You know, but what we do know is that every bird that's flown south from here for the last 4 years is having a trouble-free migration going south. So that's a very positive thing, you know, and to see that 25% increase. It's really good news, good story to tell our existing farmers and any new farmers that we meet to say, look, this is happening. Look at the graph, you know, the uplift is great, you know. So
yeah, really
long may it continue.
Yeah. Brilliant. And then, so I suppose the final thing from me is, if you would like people who are listening, farmers, farm advisors, potentially anyone who has a role in making decisions about farm management, to take one thing, one action away from listening to this podcast, what would you like that to be?
If you do one thing on your keyboard, would be to look at farmwildlife.info and look at those six key actions. And if you can look at another page and look at Operation Turtle Dove and contact an advisor, if you're in this area, then please do.
Brilliant. I'll let you have two. That's all right.
You're very kind. Sorry. Desert Island Disc there, wasn't it? I feel like.
It was a little bit. Thank you. Thanks again, Mark, for your time today. And thank you to the listeners. Please do check out the other episodes in the FAS series. I'm thinking particularly last year we had a podcast on the Big Farm and Bird Camp. So some interesting stuff about both appreciating what's on your farm and potential actions that you can do, which ties in very nicely with what we've been speaking about today. Thanks also to DEFRA, who fund the Farming Advice Service to help farmers and land managers in England understand and meet the legal requirements in English law around certain farming activities to protect people, livestock and the environment. You can find information on our events, webinars, technical articles and other online resources at farmingadviceservice.org.uk and follow us on social media. We have recently partnered with the Catchment Sensitive Farming teams as well, and Mark mentioned the importance of water quality in particular as part of the six actions. There's lots of great resources around water quality on the website. We'd welcome any feedback and suggestions from you on what else you'd like us to cover. So please do email advice@farmingadviceservice.org.uk or you can tweet us at @DeshraFaz. And if you would like to keep up to date with future podcasts, events, and news from the Farming Advice Service, you can sign up to our monthly newsletter, which is packed full of timely nudges around rules and requirements and relevant advice, which is on the FAS website, farmingadviceservice.org.uk. Thank you. Bye-bye.